Jim Morrison died July 3rd, 1971.
Frozen moment by a lake, a knife has been stolen, the death of the snake. I know the impossible sea when the dogs bark. I am a death bird, naughty night bird.
5-1, baby, 1 in 5. No one here gets out alive now. You get yours, baby, I'll get mine.
I'm Scott Muni, welcoming you to the conclusion of Jim Morrison, 3 Hours for Magic. This special has been developed in conjunction with the Delilah book, An Hour for Magic, a collection of Morrison poetry and photographs written by Frank Lisiandro.
Your ballroom days are over, baby. Night is drawing near. Shadows of the evening crawl across the hill. Yeah, walk across the floor with a flower in your hand, trying to tell me no one understands. Trading your hours for a handful of dimes. Gonna make it, baby, in our prime. Come together one more time. Get together one more time. Get together one more time. Get together.
In this hour, we'll attempt to clear up the controversy surrounding Jim's tragic death. Much of this controversy was started with a publication of No One Here Gets Out Alive, a book co-written by Jerry Hopkins and Danny Sugarman and released 3 years ago last April. In his own words, co-author Danny Sugarman.
Then there's the more interesting angle, which delights me, that no, Jim's not dead at all, and that he was just sick of being a rock star, sick of the pressures that stardom wrought, and he sought to escape. He couldn't be anonymous, even with a beard and 80 extra pounds. And in Paris, ironically, All you need is a doctor's signature on a death statement saying you're dead. He said once to a group of us clustered on the floor in the office one day when he was showing us the lyrics he'd written for what was going to be the album L.A. Woman. And he pointed out that Mr. Mojo Rison was an anagram for the name Jim Morrison. But also, that's the name I'm going to use when I call you guys from Africa after I split the country. And I don't want anybody to know it's me.
In all fairness, it must be pointed out that Mr. Sugarman was only 13 years old at the time of his association with Jim Morrison. Robbie Krieger.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's all kinds of stories that people see Jim here and there. He's always showing up somewhere. I mean, I always have dreams that Jim is alive, you know, even to this day, you know. I mean, I wouldn't doubt it, but then again, it's pretty improbable. If anybody would fake his own death and go to Africa or something like that, it would be Jim. You know, there's a slight chance he could be fooling us again. I would not totally discount the fact, you know, because I didn't, and nobody I know, in fact, nobody who's alive today has actually seen Jim's body after the death. See, the only one that we know who saw the body was Pamela, who was Jim's wife, and, you know, she died a couple of years ago.
Frank Lisiandro.
I don't think Jim's alive. I really can't see how anyone could possibly believe that. It's a myth and a story that Ray and Danny have been espousing for years, only to, in some faint hope of keeping the myth of Jim Morrison alive, as if Jim Morrison needs this kind of mythic story told about him. It's ridiculous. The guy was the foremost singer and performer of his time, including Mick Jagger, I would say. He was one of the best poets. He was a filmmaker. He was an extraordinary character. And to have to tell stories, to make up stories about him is ridiculous. There's enough material that exists in his life that there's no stories need to be told. Let's just tell the truth. It's much more interesting than these tales that people are telling. Jim is dead. He's buried in Paris in Pierre Lachaise Cemetery. I've visited the place of his burial several times. I'm convinced that he's dead because knowing him as well as I did during those 4 years, I know that he couldn't be alive and not have been noticed, seen, recognized, picked up on by somebody, because he had an extraordinary personality. He just wasn't a guy who would walk down the street who you would pass by. You somehow noticed him. Even with a big beard, people would notice him. He was totally creative. We would be seeing his poems published now, maybe in French, maybe in English. I mean, there would be some hint, some clue. I don't think he could have gone underground for these 10, 11 years and be completely hidden. I think it's impossible. The only underground he's going is where he's buried.
Nestled in your hollow shoulder.
The unknown soldier.
Once and for all, former Doors manager Bill Siddons clears up the mystery surrounding how Jim died.
I called Pamela from L.A. and said, I've heard from a very reliable source that Jim died, and I want to know if it's true. And she said no, and I pushed her and managed to make her admit that it was true. And she tried to say, but don't worry, I've got it under control. And I said, Pamela, I'm coming. I'm coming to help you. I'm not coming to represent the Doors or for any business function. Jim is a friend. I'm coming to help. And she tried to tell me not to, and I just knew I had to. And I left town, got in a plane, and went to Paris. And I stayed at the hotel a couple blocks from their flat, and I spent many, many hours in the apartment, and Jim was in the bedroom in a casket that was, you know, closed. It was a... I remember it so vividly. It was a beautiful white oak casket. I mean, I remember admiring the craftsmanship of it with big brass bolts that screwed it closed and that stuff. And it literally never occurred to me to open the casket. To me, it's such a barbaric practice to look at a dead body that I, honest to God, never thought of it until Jim was in the ground and I called my business manager and said, I buried Jim. And he said, did you see the body? And I said, no, why would I? And he was, like, so astounded that I was that stupid. But, hey, you know, I threw the dirt on his casket. So it was too late. Let me go look. It just, you know, it was something that never occurred to me. I couldn't imagine asking, let's get this casket open so I can verify that he's dead. Bullshit. Pamela was his woman for as long as I'd known the guy. And if she says he's dead, he's dead. I never believed in her ability to conspire enough to ever... And none of these myths about Jim's death have ever held any water with me. But they do... They do fit his image perfectly. They, you know, Jim was, like I say, always testing, always doing something really extraordinary. So I never really resented them. At this point in my life, I'm beginning to resent them because I feel like certain people are using it to exploit, using it to maintain a mythology. And, you know, yeah, I kind of like the idea of helping Jim maintain the mythology, but at the same time, I don't like the idea of lying. And, okay, I never saw his body, but I buried the man. I carried his casket. I put him in the ground. I lived through a few days with his wife, and I know that her pain was real. For no other reason, I lived through it with Pamela, and I know how real what she was living through was. She wasn't a good enough actress to pull that one off. So there's never been a question to me. Jim's dead, and Ray, if you want to keep saying, yeah, Jim could be around, go ahead and play your game, but to me it's a silly game.
Turn us down, fix your hair, move ourselves, move ourselves, move ourselves.
Jim himself may well have found the reports of his death to be quite exaggerated.
When the still sea conspires in armor, and her sullen and aborted currents breed tiny monsters, true sailing is dead. Awkward instant, and the first animal is jettison. Legs furiously pumping their stiff green gallop, and heads bob up, poised, delicate, pause.
Adolf Hitler is still alive. Ooh, I slept with her last night. Yeah! Come out from behind that false mustache, Adolf. I know you're in there. Ha 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 ha.
Again, we remind you that all exclusive material contained throughout is copyright James Douglas Morrison Publishing and may not be used outside the context of our show. Keyboardist Ray Manzarek offers an explanation for the roots of Jim's demise.
He got busted in Miami, man. Pulling out his ding-dong, right. Hey, that helped kill him, man. That whole Miami thing helped kill Jim Morrison, killed his spirit. And when his spirit started to die, his body was not far behind.
Take the highway to the end of the night.
Sittens continues.
The next morning after the show we did in Miami, we were walking down out of the elevator to go have breakfast. Jim and I and this woman named Bonnie Mandina, who was an attorney, very, very bright girl. And I believe it was her that said, Jim, what are you doing this for? Why do you go out on stage in front of thousands of people like you did last night and go through this whole cathartic experience to try to get them to listen to you? They just want a boogie. And Jim said, I just hope that someday I'm respected as a poet.
Thank you.
Harrison was no stranger to death. Frank Lisiandro explains.
Jim was interested in the subject of death. He was not afraid of the subject of death. He wrote about death, he sang about death, and he spoke freely about it. He wasn't interested in suicide. He was interested in pushing the boundary of life to the point where it came very close to death, so that he could experience, taste, feel, sense what it must be like. The fear or the sensation right on the edge between life and death is where the place he wanted to go to recharge his batteries, to get a glimpse to the other side. So he put himself in jeopardy many times to experience that.
Bill Siddons continues.
He was one of those people who would find a new experience and do it beyond any rationale to find out where it would ultimately get you. That side of his personality never left him. It was always extremism. It was always, how far can you push? What can you get out of this? I think that it was all kind of related to his fascination with death, because he knew that once you lose that battle, you lost it. But he was always trying to push it. He did a number of things throughout his life that all of us sat there just going, how could anyone take that big a chance with his life? He just did a number of things that were beyond comprehension. In Seattle one time, he jumped out of the 15th floor window, but he grabbed the window ledge on the way out. And of course, everybody in the room lost their minds for that long. It was like, ah! And he came back going, ha ha ha, gotcha. You know, that he tested you. He always wanted to know, how far can this situation get?
Bill Siddons' wife, Sherry.
There was an incident in Hawaii where we had all gone over there, and he decided he wanted to rent a motorcycle and go driving all over the islands, and he was drunk. And we had hired this giant bodyguard for him that was supposed to protect him and everything. And so we all go traipsing off to the lobby, and I'm very determined that he's not going to do this. And he's telling the girl over the phone, find me this motorcycle, I'm gonna go riding. And she's looking at me and I'm saying, don't do this. Absolutely do not get him a motorcycle. And so she's looking at me and looking at him, and he touches my stomach and he said, this is my wife. He said, but don't listen to her, she's a little bit upset. And he's kind of, you know, patronizing or placating me in some sense. And Tony, the bodyguard, is standing there, and everybody's just standing there. Jim was very powerful, and he wants a motorcycle. So finally I thought, okay, what can I do? And I walked outside, and the motorcycle showed up, and I said, we don't need you today, thank you very much. And he turned around and left. And so Jim didn't get to ride the motorcycle. And he just kind of went off. He was like a child in some ways. And he just, oh, I'm not going to ride a motorcycle. Okay, next. But the next day he came up to me and he said, I want to thank you. He said, I probably would have killed myself on that. And I said, I know.
Zarek.
Jim Morrison was obsessed with life, man. Jim said, sex starts it and death ends it.